Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to all our listeners. This is America's Great Loop Cruisers Association weekly blog radio show. With us, as usual, is Steve, and I am Janice Cromer. I'm the director of the organization. I'd like to thank our Admiral sponsors. They're very, very much appreciated. Curtis Stokes and Associates, Dog River Marina, Dozier's Regatta Point Yachting Center, Dozier's Waterway Guides and Magazine, and Skipper Bob Publications. And I hope there are non-members out there listening to the show. The Great Loop is the continuous waterway that encompasses the eastern portion of North America, including the Atlantic and Gulf intracoastal waterways, the Great Lakes, the Canadian Heritage Canals, and the inland rivers of America's heartland. America's Great Loop Cruisers Association, or AGLCA as we call ourselves, is an organization of people who share a sense of adventure and curiosity about the Great Loop. Our primary purpose is to disseminate information and enhance the overall experience of those learning about, dreaming of, exploring, or safely cruising the Loop. Our website is www.greatloop.org, and we'd love for you to become a member. Our guest host today is Jim Healy, a frequent poster to our discussion forum and a Gold Looper. There's been a lot of chatter in the forum in the last several days on AIS. Jim will discuss its benefits and give us their valuable insight on its use. Peg might even chime in, too, if I can convince her to. Okay, Jim, what does AIS stand for and just what does it do?
Well, good morning, Janice.
Good morning. And first of all, thank you so much for helping us out today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for inviting me. AIS stands for Automatic Identification System. It is a technology that allows aircraft and boats and floating AtoNs like floating buoys and meteorological buoys and even satellites to talk with one another, monitor one another for position, the nature of a cargo, the destination of a vessel, and real-time operation stuff like the stuff we care about would be the vessel's course over ground, the vessel's speed over ground, perhaps whether or not the vessel is turning. And it all happens pretty much automatically in real time.
Okay, then tell me why it's different. And this is a novice talking. I imagine because it's you use the AIS way before you see a vessel. But what's different from just using your VHF radio?
Well, the way the technology works is that there are two VHF radio channels, 87 and 88, that the system uses to talk back and forth. And those channels are where the vessel's position, location, speed, all the information about those vessels is exchanged on those two channels. The vessel has, there are two kinds of AIS. There are receivers and there are transponders. Receivers simply listen. Transponders also talk. They are the ones that transmit information about that vessel, and they do it based on onboard instruments like their own built-in GPS. That's how they transmit their position. Their speed information can be GPS or sensor-based. Rate of turn information is sensor-based. That's all that stuff comes from the vessel instruments. Now, there are two kinds of transponders, and that's very often where we get into this discussion. There's Class A AIS and Class B AIS, and the technologies are actually quite different.
Yeah.
With Class A stuff, Class A was developed for maritime shipping, for ocean-based international maritime shipping, not for cruising boats. And it has a great deal of information about the ship itself, the name of the vessel, registration port, all the stuff that doesn't change. a lot of information about the cargo, destination, origin ports that is voyage unique, and then it has the real-time information. Class B doesn't have the same amount of information. Let me just ask, how much of the actual comparison do you want to do between Class A and Class B?
There are not much, Jim, because 99% of us are going to be having the Class B.
Okay, so...
I was just curious as to what classes there were and why they were different.
Well, the two that we're most familiar with are Class A and Class B, and then there's another set of devices like these weather buoys and meteorological tide stations, that sort of thing, that also operate on the AIS system.
Uh-huh.
Now, I think from an AIS and Class A and Class B point of view, really, which is the better technology? Unquestionably, the better technology is Class A. They are stronger radios. They have a greater range. They transmit more information more frequently. And they are, the most important thing about them is the data link, this VHF radio data link that I told you about before is 2 minutes long. There are 4,500 slots in it, and it's 2 minutes long. And what happens is these little broadcasts, snippets of information, get broadcast in one or more of those slots of time.
Uh-huh.
And the Class A stuff is guaranteed a place for transmission. Class B stuff is not. So in a crowded area, like, for example, I know you guys are near Charleston. In Charleston Harbor, on a busy day, Class B messages can get lost in busy, extremely busy harbors. Class B stuff can get lost.
Okay.
So the technology is very good, but not perfect.
Okay. Class B is acceptable, would you say, for most of the loop, or what would your recommendation be?
Well, for the transponders, for the units that transmit, there are four places that I do recommend them for cruising boats. I think they are extremely useful on the inland rivers. That's probably my number one area because most boaters cruise in good weather, and in good weather, the inland rivers, when you're out on the water, you run into these little switchbacks and you can't see around the corners.
Uh-huh.
So Class B AIS units will communicate with the commercial tows and allow the tows to see you and you to see the tows. So I highly recommend that. That's for daytime, regular normal daytime cruising on the inland rivers. The other place on the inland rivers where AIS of any kind is extremely helpful is if there are several places, as you know, where you need to anchor at night off the channel, but in the river, right? You're going to be anchoring very near the edge of the channel. Obviously, AIS in a situation like that is a useful thing to have because the tows will see you. Now, of course, you need to realize that not every boat carries, even of the big tows, not all of the big tows carry AIS. So it's not a perfect technology, but it's certainly helpful, and I recommend it on the inland rivers. Now, the other three cases where I personally recommend it is if you're going to do any kind of poor visibility, cruise it where you're out and it's foggy, rainy, visibility is poor, that's a good time to have AIS, obviously.
Uh-huh.
Most of us try to avoid those conditions, but let's face it, we get caught from time to time, and sometimes you just don't have a whole lot of choice. You do what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two cases would be night operations. I think if you're operating at night, anything that gives you a margin of visibility is a good thing. And also offshore operations. If you're crossing from Apalachicola or Carrabelle to the South Florida to Tarpon or Clearwater, that's a good place to use AIS.
Well, I think when you combine all of those four instances, it's probably a very good thing to have AIS on your boat when you're doing the loop.
I would never discourage anybody from having it. Now, however, my other option, my personal preferred option is we carry an AIS receiver. We don't carry a transponder. And I view it as my personal responsibility. I'm the one who's responsible for keeping in touch with TOWS, for identifying navigation threats. I do that primarily by looking out the window. AIS helps me see things that are big things that are coming, like TOWS, big TOWS. Those are very helpful. For example, when we were coming down the Mississippi River at Cairo out the Ohio, that's a fleeting area. And normally in fleeting areas, there are so many targets that you can't always tell what's going on, especially with smaller instruments. If you have a 15-inch TV screen, you get to see a whole lot more than I do with a 6-inch chart plotter screen. Uh-huh. So different technologies of chart plotter allow you to see more or less detail about what's going on. But at least you can see that there's a vessel that might be getting underway, a tow that might be getting underway, and you have the opportunity to call him and say, are you going to get underway? Because if so, I need to back down or be out of your way. But it's still, I view it as my responsibility to do that, not theirs to contact me.
What if you can't see them?
Well, you can see them with a receiver. AIS receivers don't transmit.
Sorry. The receiver now, you can see, you just can't talk to them.
Now, okay. The reason for my bias is because so many people misuse the technology. They leave it on all the time, basically. They just leave it, they turn it on and then leave it on. So what happens is when you're in busy harbors and you have clear visual conditions, it's actually more of a distraction than it is a help, because you got so many boats moving at different speeds and different directions that you need to be looking out the window. You can't get distracted by AIS or an AIS alarm.
What about having your first mate watch the screen?
Well, in terms of you knowing where to turn or what to do, you still need to be looking out the window. I mean, the bottom line is you need to be looking out the window, and so you can get distracted by the technology.
Okay, then a question. And everyone, Peg is Jim's admiral. You mentioned Peg felt it was the best thing you ever got on your boat. Why is that, then?
Well, because on the inland rivers, Peg was really, 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 really happy. Peg is a person who worries a little bit about things that she can't see, but she knows are there and go bump in the night, like big toes. And so when I put a technology on board where I could see those before they were of concern in a meeting or overtaking situation, I could see them while they were still miles away, and we could talk and decide where we were going to wait, where we were going to go first, what side of the channel we were going to be on, what he needed us to do. She liked that. She liked that a lot.
I would like
that. She really liked being able to know that towboat was going to come around the corner and where it was going to be and where we were going to be.
Okay. You mentioned in our busy harbor, people keep it on. From the different chatter in the discussion forum, there seems to be a difference of opinion on etiquette that is used with AIS. Is there a certain etiquette that you prefer? When do you keep it on? When do you turn it off?
Well, certainly if you're tied up in a marina in a slip, it should be off. If you leave it on when you're tied up in a marina in a slip, all you're doing is demonstrating your wealth. I mean, you're essentially bragging, keeping up with the Joneses. You are not, if you're tied up in a slip, you are not a navigation hazard to anybody. And having your AIS squawking away is, all it does is, I use the term VHF pollution, right? You're just wasting time on the VHF channels. If you're in a safe anchorage, out of the way, away from the channel, away from people, turn it off. It doesn't need to be on. All you're doing there is wasting your battery life. In clear visual conditions on the Chesapeake Bay, in clear visual conditions on the Albemarle Sound, you don't need it. You've got 7 or 8 or 10 miles of visual situational awareness, and you don't need the technology. You've got plenty of time to get out of the way of other traffic. And
just for a sense of security, or?
Well, I don't know, Janice, why people do what they do. There isn't any formal training around any of this stuff. And I really think a lot of people, you know, you pay somebody to install a unit. If they wire it into the permanent power supply of the boat, the thing is just on. And that's, you know, fundamentally discourteous things to do. So, I just personally believe that there are appropriate and not appropriate times to use the tool. It's a tool like any other tool. You don't use a screwdriver to drive a nail. You use and AIS can be used and misabused.
Mm-hmm. I have to interrupt you for a minute, Jim. We're ready for our commercial from our Admiral sponsor, Curtis Stokes and Associates, and then we'll get back to our discussion.
That'll be fine.
Curtis Stokes and Associates is a yacht brokerage company that specializes in great loop capable boats. Curtis Stokes is a supporter of AGLCA at the Admiral level. If you're looking to buy or sell a Great Loop veteran from a trusted and knowledgeable broker, visit the company on the web at curtisstokes.net. Email curtisstokes@curtisstokes.net or call 954-684-0218.
Okay, Jim, question about regulations. You said there's no there's no rules or regulations. Do you see the FCC getting involved in regulating AIS, or do you think that's too far away from the future?
Oh, the FCC does regulate AIS as a technology. It's a VHF radio technology.
Okay.
Very briefly, we got our AIS receiver in 2007 when we did the loop. That was before Class B AIS transponders were available in the United States. The FCC has a process they call type approving, and the Class B technology had not been agreed to internationally at that time. So this is a pretty new technology we're talking about. This is not a long-standing technology. From a user point of view, It is highly regulated by the FCC. You have to get one of the things that AIS depends on is something called an MMSI number. It's a Maritime Mobile Information System, I think is what it stands for, but it really doesn't matter. It's an identification number that goes with your VHF radio for something called digital selective calling, but it's also used in, that MMSI number also goes in an AIS transponder. And the FCC requires that that be done by the manufacturer. You can't do that yourself. When you buy the unit, you give them the name of the boat and the MMSI number, and the manufacturer puts that information into the unit for you.
Okay. Talking about manufacturers, where do you get an AIS? I mean, are there different manufacturers, or is it basically one main manufacturer, or different brands out there?
Yeah, there are many manufacturers, Janice, and I guess the best thing I would tell you to do, if I were going to buy an AIS unit, what I would do is, the first thing I'd do is read the blogs. For example, I have an article on AIS on my blog.
Uh-huh.
And the only manufacturer I talk about is the one that I mentioned that I own, an ICOM unit. ICOM is a well-known electronics manufacturer. But after you do basic reading about what the units are, the next place to go is to the trusted internet, right? You go out there and type in AIS, and you'll get hits from lots of manufacturers.
Okay.
Go to a place like Defender.com or Amazon.com and type in AIS, and you'll get all sorts of opportunities.
Can you give me, I mean, is there a general consensus of the price, or is it all over the board based on the manufacturer?
There are many options. Some AIS units talk in, the technology they use is NMEA, either NMEA 0183 or NMEA 2000. Some will also talk by Wi-Fi, so that you can use a Wi-Fi connection to a computer program or an iPad program or an Android program to see AIS targets. We have that aboard our boat, so that I, for example, have a nav solution on my iPad, and I can see all of my boat instruments with that because of a wireless multiplexer. But AI and AI, I like that for AIS because it's you can see it no matter where you are in the boat. So there are several different options that are available. Units, a transponder unit could start as low as $250, and they can get up to $1,000 easily. A Class B transponder. Receivers are generally less. Receivers may start at $180 or even less than that and run up to maybe $200, $300. Class A units are coming down in price. For a person who can afford a Class A unit, that is clearly a better technology, and it would be the premier recommendation. Online would be go to the internet. That's the best option you have for finding these units and price shopping.
Now they have to be installed by an electrician, by a mechanic, or an electronics person.
No, you can. They're very easy to install. They take a regular VHF antenna and a normal power supply, and then depending on how you're going to tie them into your instruments, that's probably the most complicated part of it. I do mine myself. I do all my own work myself for all of my boat instruments. I do everything myself, but obviously not everyone would choose to do that. But it's a simple install. You'd have to hire an electronics person locally. It probably would not take more than, if you had to actually install an antenna and run wires, the whole thing would be done in a half a day.
I thought, for some reason, it was much more complicated than that. Again, recognize I'm the total novice, but I did read in the discussion forum people talking about wiring it directly into your generator. So that it's on all the time. In other words, what is the best way if you wanted to turn it off and on quickly? I would imagine it would be just a simple switch.
Yes, mine is tied to the power supply on my flybridge, and when we secure the boat at night, we turn off all the instruments except I usually leave an anchor alarm going, but. Other than that, you know, my little GPS with the anchor alarm, other than that, everything gets turned off, including the receiver.
Okay. The only other question I have is, do you foresee in the foreseeable future somebody coming out with, since they're all so magical to me, a free app on the internet that you can use on your iPad and not actually have the transponder and the receiver?
You know, I'm really glad you mentioned that because it does bring up a topic. Joe and I had talked about this, and I forgot it, didn't make note of it. There are apps that you can get for both Android smartphones and tablets and for Apple iPhone and iPad platforms. The one that comes to mind is an app called Marine Traffic, but there are several others. These apps, people really are confused about what they can do. In large metropolitan areas, they're quite reliable. They depend on shore stations that receive AIS data from AIS targets moving around in a harbor. And then those shore stations, in turn, relay that information to a web server like marinetraffic.com. In highly populated areas like Charleston Harbor, that's fairly real time because there are a lot of those shore stations operating, and they're really so. If you were in Charleston, you were using a web-based application like Marine Traffic, you would think that you were seeing traffic in real time. The problem with that is when you get into more remote areas where there aren't the number of shore stations that are seeing those targets and transmitting them, there can be huge delays and huge errors in where those ships are, as much as an hour or two.
Oh, my goodness.
And that brings up the related topic of becoming over-dependent on this technology.
Uh-huh.
If you have an app on a cell phone, in many, many, many parts of the Great Loop, That app may not be at all accurate. It may be very, very, very deceiving. And in terms of over-dependence on the technology, remember, not every boat carries AIS. In fact, actually, it's a relatively small percentage of the total number of boats, even of commercial boats, even of big tows. If you look at these big towboats on the Mississippi and on the Illinois River, if you look at, you know, not all of those big tows carry AIS. Only about 85% of them do. I actually had a conversation with one of those tow captains that said, "How come I don't see AIS on you?" And the answer was, "We're not required to carry it, sir, because we don't go down to the port of New Orleans." And I said, "Wow, that's kind of interesting." That was his answer anyway. So you can't assume that 100% of the boats that would be of concern to you will be carrying the AIS.
Interesting. So again, as in all things, the captain is responsible, and the captain has to stay alert and has to be aware of everything around him.
My advice is, look out the window.
Steve, do you have any questions? I know you've been quiet today.
The only question I had for Jim is it seems like over the last 5 years, is when AIS has become more and more popular. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. AIS has become more popular. As a matter of fact, I am definitely in the minority here, Steve, because one of the things that Homeland Security is doing, this is sort of interesting. You know, we've had all this stuff about the NSA in the news. NOAA released a free app. I should mention this too. NOAA released a free app that will provide AIS capability on smartphones. That free app has the ability to use your smartphone to essentially as a transponder. Now, it doesn't tell other boats where you are, but it does tell the Coast Guard and Homeland Security where you are. So if you install that free app, you are essentially installing, quote unquote, this is a sensitive subject to a lot of people, but it's a spying tool. It's really interesting what's going on out there in the world. So yes, it has become more popular. I'm sure it will continue to grow in popularity among many, many people. I personally think a receiver is the best solution, both for your personal privacy and for your responsibility as the captain of your vessel.
Well, that's very, very good opinion. I appreciate that. Again, Steve, I imagine it's the latest toy for a lot of the captains out there that they love their electronics. I'm surprised we don't have one yet.
Well, it's more than a toy, but the usefulness of it really has to do with how many people adopt it.
Yeah.
You know, if it's only one out of 100 boats that has it, it's almost useless. If it's 85 out of 100 boats, it's a lot better.
It was great, Steve. A year ago, Peg and I cruised up New England and up the coast of Maine, and we got as far as Acadia Park, and we had hoped to go further, but we got delayed. Anyway, in the heavy fogs up there, did you get offshore? A very high percentage of the sailing vessels up there have AIS compared to what you would find in the rest of the country. But it was really funny. If you call them on the radio on channel 13 or channel 16 to arrange a passage in a heavy fog, they had power to show off their AIS, but they didn't have power to come back and answer to VHF radio. So, I mean, what the hell's the point of the technology, right? I mean, you know, it was just funny.
Yeah.
Well, we are just about out of time. Jim, this has been extremely helpful, extremely informative. I appreciate your time. I will tell those people listening out there, we have pre-recorded this show due to travel plans, and there's no call-in today, but I imagine a lot of people would have comments. Also, very, very, very helpful person, Joe Pico, was supposed to be on. We think he's iced in New Bern, so thank you anyway, Joe. And let us know what you thought about this show. Next week, I'm not sure what the subject will be, but we'll be back. And everyone have a safe cruising. And Jim and Peg, thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Janice. Glad to be with you.
Bye.
Thanks, Jim.